From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a local medical provider's office. There were three doses of the Moderna vaccine sitting on a counter. Now, when doctors have to make decisions on who gets the vaccines, there are very strict phases in New York State. You've been hearing about them. And Governor Cuomo has been very strict about this. In fact, he has said this week that for providers who give the vaccine to people who are not in phase, there could be loss of medical license, fines, and investigations. That puts a lot of pressure on those in charge of vaccine distribution to make sure the vaccines are only going to people who are in phase. But in the office we're talking about at Trillium Health, you know, there are times where people don't show up to receive a shot they're scheduled for. What do you do in that moment? Well, when there's three vaccine doses sitting on a counter, they've got to make a decision. Can we find people in phase? You can't just give them to people who want them. And with a vaccine, once they are drawn into needles, there is essentially a ticking clock before that vaccine is no longer effective. And so they set out trying to find three people who were technically in phase and wouldn't result in them being investigated, fined, or worse. It's a tense situation. There's been a lot of pressure on vaccine distribution networks, healthcare systems. The governor said this week he doesn't blame individual doctors and nurses, but he says he does blame healthcare leaders for the vaccine rollout not going faster. Now, typically, Governor Cuomo does a Monday, Wednesday, and Friday briefing starting at 11:30. We haven't heard from his office today. We could still hear from the governor today. There has been no communication from his office about whether we're going to get a briefing today. And if he does, we will carry it for you live. If you are wondering about broadening the vaccine distribution network, there have been a lot of conversations. And as a journalist, I've heard from a lot of people privately about us being perhaps days away as a state from hearing about a much broader network of where the general public will get vaccinated, about where others will. But nothing official yet. So we'll have the governor whenever he is ready, if he is giving a briefing today. But our first guest is the chief medical officer of Trillium Health. It's Dr. Robert Birenbaum, who has been in that position for 5 years, and he has helped lead the distribution of Moderna vaccines through Trillium. I asked him to talk to us about the situation in phase one, or in this first phase, I should say, and what it's going to be like for all of us as we go through these phases, what it's like dealing with New York State, with the governor who has been very critical of his colleagues in this rollout. He joins us now to discuss it.
Thanks for having me.
Give us a sense where things are with the vaccine so far with your organization.
So we received vaccine from the state, a total of 400 doses, but we were able to get an extra dose out of many of the vials, so it turned out to be 440. We started by offering the vaccine to every team member at Trillium Health, and then also offered the vaccine based on who met criteria under the governor's restrictions to the community. And we were able to vaccine a large number of medical practices that are private practices, and that was in partnership with the Monroe County Medical Society and the Public Health Department, as well as we had a lot of team members from the Vale of Hope come and get vaccinated.
Are we talking Moderna or Pfizer vaccines?
We received the Moderna vaccine.
A little easier to handle based on cold storage requirements, is that right?
Absolutely. Definitely easier. Pfizer obviously has significant cold storage requirements, and Moderna is really standard medical freezer and refrigerator.
Okay. Any issues with receipt of those vaccines and then with the distribution of them so far?
No, none at all.
Okay. And when it comes to, you know, the phase that we're in these early stages, is it pretty clear so far who it needs to go to, how it rolls out, and, you know, sort of how those plans and arrangements are made?
You know, it has become clearer. I think that the direction has changed a little bit, and often every day we receive something from the state. But, you know, at this point it's clear who is able to receive vaccine.
Things are about to get, you know, a little bit more complicated as we move through the phases and eventually reach the general public. And I think it's still unclear if we're going to see, you know, the CVSs of the world or other organizations that are not part of the medical system directly, if they're invoked, in the way that in Florida they're bringing Publix into the chain. They're, you know, in different places they're doing different things. Is that something that you expect to happen, or do you think the medical system can handle the full distribution of the vaccine?
I would hope it would happen. My opinion is, as many people who can get vaccinated with this vaccine, the better. You know, pharmacies offer vaccines other than, you know, influenza. They offer many different types of vaccines. So for them to be part of the solution and get vaccine into arms faster, that's really the goal.
The governor has been critical this week and in recent days of healthcare leaders. He says he's not critical of doctors and nurses who are doing their best with the vaccine, but he says healthcare leaders should have been more prepared to get the vaccines out more quickly. And he wants to see that happen. Is that a fair criticism?
Yes and no. I think to his point, you know, when he clarified he's not critical of doctors and nurses, but healthcare systems and their processes. So part of my response is, but doctors and nurses run the healthcare systems. And there has been kind of a start and stop of when we're going to receive vaccines. And I know for some big health systems, how it was distributed. I think for us, we're smaller. We're a federally qualified health center look like, and, you know, Ryan Way program. We were waiting and waiting, and finally we received distribution. And we were able to jump on it very quickly and have our plan go forward and have vaccine clinics. That's harder when you're University of Rochester Medical Center or Rochester Regional Health, you know, who have thousands of employees scattered throughout multiple regions. So I understand the criticism. I think all of us, this is going to be a very hard learning experience with all the same goal of getting vaccine into the arm.
Yeah, and I think I made the mistake, and maybe a lot of people did, back in early December when we found out, you know, Pfizer's first round was going to be arriving around December 15th. Moderna was going to be coming about a week later. So I started to see those numbers, and as I recall, I think it was 170,000 Pfizer doses, 346,000 Moderna doses, and I thought, oh, well, those will be in arm. That'll be 500,000 doses in people's arms within a day or two. You know, not real.
Yeah.
The naivete that I had of thinking, well, we've got the vaccines, they'll be immediately out. Obviously, that's not the case. But what is a realistic timeline of receipt of vaccines, which will come in different waves when these companies are ready to send them? What's a realistic timeline of receipt versus distribution?
So, you know, it's interesting. Receipt, I think, is fine. Distribution, you know, we're distributing to patients. And I think that's the one thing that I would say to the governor is patients sometimes are unpredictable, right? So when we're talking about moving to the patient stage, getting them in is unpredictable. And by the way, when we're even vaccinating community, so physicians' offices or places like the Villa of Hope, they have jobs. And they're working every day, so to get them to our vaccine clinic is been difficult. And so, you know, we're making sure we're open. I would say for health systems, same thing. I think the two health systems area have done a nice job really establishing, you know, their vaccine programs at this point. But distribution and then, you know, distribution to arm can take a week, can take 10 days, can take 2 weeks. So, you know, I think some of the restrictions of you've had it for since this day and, you know, this Thursday by the end of the day, it all has to be in arms. I think the practicality of that, it sounds great, but isn't also a reality at times.
Okay. And so let me also ask you to kind of weigh in on a debate that some public leaders are having in this state. And this is not asking you to sort of pick political sides or pick, because I know that there's, especially when it comes to Bill de Blasio and Andrew Cuomo, there's a sort of this alpha dog, you know, public fight that seems to happen sometimes. But there has been an interesting back and forth between the mayor of New York City and the governor this week when the mayor of New York City said that there needs to be more flexibility for healthcare providers and those who are in charge of vaccine distribution. He was pointing out that, you know, the governor was being very strict about people will be fined, you could lose your license if you give the vaccine to someone who's not in phase yet. And de Blasio was saying, look, if people don't show up when they're in phase and they're supposed to get it, and we've got a timeline, a shelf life for these vaccines, they've got to go to somebody. And we've got to have that flexibility to say so. And the governor said, no, You cannot do that. And what de Blasio said was, quote, in the real world, you know that you need freedom and flexibility. The governor's ideas on this make no sense. And he went on to compare the governor to a general at headquarters during a war who hasn't visited the front lines. I mean, it was tough. It was a back and forth about what is realistic here. I don't want to ask you to pick sides, but I do want to ask you to sort of weigh in. And if you think there needs to be more flexibility for those in charge of distribution who have to make these decisions if people aren't showing up.
So here's my take on that. And again, I'm not picking sides.
However,
I think it would be exceedingly helpful if the governor were to reduce some of these restrictions and decrease some of the threatening. That doesn't feel good as a practicing physician and as the chief medical officer at Trillium to tell me you can only give this vaccine to certain people. And by the way, if you're wrong, we're going to investigate you. So my opinion would really be, if I could ask the governor, hey, can you lighten these restrictions? Can we move to some of our highest risk population? I mean, our mission here at Trillium is to serve the underserved, and we have a significant number of patients who are high risk that if they got COVID, very well likely would be hospitalized, and actually even scarier, could pass away from it. So by being so restrictive on who we can do it and the time frame to do it, he's forgetting the humanity of what really happens in day-to-day practice, which is, hey, some people don't want this yet, but others really do want it. And we want to give the vaccine, but at times we feel like we're being limited on who we can give it to and when. So my goal would be, hey, less restriction, more flexibility.
Is there any risk that the restrictions will actually cause some vaccines to sit for so long they become unusable or ineffective?
Well, I can tell you from our standpoint, we would never let that happen. But I do have fear for some of the larger health systems. When you draw up Moderna, you have a limited number of hours to get that into an arm, or you're wasting it. And, you know, I can tell you we made a lot of phone calls Thursday late afternoon. We had three doses sitting there, and we needed that in arms. And so I made a bunch of phone calls to people who met criteria for it, and we got three people in. But that doesn't feel good. That doesn't feel right, because if we didn't have the restriction, I wouldn't have limitations.
Sure, and I'm sure that's a lot of work to get three people vaccinated without a threat of some sort of investigation or loss of license. A couple more questions, and I'll let you go, Doctor. Do you get the sense that the state government is learning as we go here? Because we're all learning. I mean, we're in a crisis here. And, you know, when I talk privately to people on the governor's staff, I'm often told he gets it. He's listening. This is very difficult and complex. There will be adjustments made midstream. Be patient. Is that fair? Do you think that what you're hearing from the state is, hey, okay, we hear you, we're listening, we're going to be patient, and we're going to make adjustments?
So I think we hear some of that, and then at times we hear you're not doing enough, you're not doing a good job. And I think that's hard for those of us who are entrenched in what we're seeing in terms of patients who are getting sick, and now we're finally seeing light and we're getting vaccine. And I think more, less restrictions and more, you know, delivery of hope and delivery of excitement. And this should be on a positive side with the least amount of restrictions and the least amount of feelings that we're not doing a good job. Because that makes it hard for us.
Sure. And I assume when you say the least amount of restrictions, that doesn't mean a scenario in which there will be no restrictions and what we will see is the vaccine.
Mess, yeah.
Yeah, or chaos, or the vaccine given to the highest bidders or the people with the most status. It sounds to me like what you're saying is trust your local health leaders to make the decisions. We will base it on the guidelines. We will get it into the arms of the people who need it most. But in those crunches, if we don't have people showing up, we will find people who want it and need it. Is that right?
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that's really the key, that we understand who is affected most outside of obviously healthcare, but what patient types are affected or could be affected most by this virus. And none of us want to actually go outside of those guidelines. We understand them. We really want to ensure that we get this vaccine to the right people. And I think easing the restrictions on that would really be the best way for us to really get a grasp on this pandemic. No one that I know in healthcare is going to turn around and just put it in someone's arm who really, you know, should be later on because they're younger and healthy. What our goal is, we have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of patients that we know really need this vaccine. And our bigger concern is, you know, that we don't want to see healthcare disparities in terms of who's getting this vaccine as well. I mean, there was significant, you know, racial disparities in terms of who was getting this virus, who was getting hospitalized. And I don't want to see that, you know, when it comes to vaccine distribution.
Last two questions for you. What do you want the general public to know about the phases that are to come? Whatever phase we are in, what should we know about vaccine distribution?
So they should know that, you know, the goal right now is to, for those of us in healthcare who want this vaccine, to get that vaccine so we can stay open to take care of people. And that's the goal right now. The next goal the public should know is we want to get the vaccine, once we're through healthcare and frontline workers, we want to get the vaccines to the most vulnerable people who, if they got this virus, could have a bad outcome. And then I think the last thing is I would like people to see this vaccine as a beacon of hope for all of us in this community to be able to move forward maybe to a different normal than what we're seeing now.
Finally, I don't know if you feel like this is your sphere to weigh in, but I will ask, given that we saw Pfizer just come out with a statement saying that the second dose, the so-called booster dose, could be delayed to 42 days instead of 21 days. We could have double the amount of time, 6 weeks in between. And that comes in response to health leaders like Ashish Jha from Harvard, among others, saying that given the new variant of the coronavirus that is more transmissible, given the rate of infection we're seeing in the country, maybe we should focus on getting one dose to everybody first and not be so strict about two doses. Again, that is not a national recommendation. That's not the current health recommendations locally. I don't want listeners thinking, oh, good, I'm only going to get one. But that is at least being debated. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, where I stand right now is that the current research is really significantly leaning towards getting two doses into people. And while I understand the theory of, hey, let's get one dose into everybody and then worry about the second dose, my concern is being able to track that. That becomes really almost an unmanageable situation. And the clinical studies clearly showed that two doses were really needed to, you know, get us to 94-95%. And I think it would be to a disadvantage to change that right now.
Good luck in the rest of, you know, the work that you and your colleagues have to do with this. We are so grateful for what you're doing, and thanks for making time for the program today.
No, thanks for having us on, and I really appreciate what you're doing and getting the word out.
That's Dr. Robert Birnbaum, the chief medical officer from Trillium, who I think it's fair to say was critical of the governor in a very professional and measured way. You know, critical without being bombastic. I think he's just asking for a little space for, as he says, a recognition of the humanity of this work, the humanity of trying to find people who want the vaccine, of being in a limited time scale when you've drawn vaccine into needles, of making sure that you've got the space to do your job. And I think the governor's office, you know, from the people I've talked to, they understand that. They're doing their best to try to keep it a productive and constructive relationship. But the governor has made it clear this week that he doesn't have a whole lot of tolerance for people who go outside of the phase schedule. Now, if you are wondering about the governor's remarks, which typically happen Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we have not heard from the governor's office on this. And there's a lot of reporters who did expect him to give a briefing today, and that could still happen. Could happen any minute, might happen later this afternoon. There is some talk among various sources that we are close to hearing from New York State officials about a plan to widen the distribution network. I mean, that's not exactly breaking news. We know that will happen eventually. But there's some talk that it could happen very soon, that we're going to hear about whether it's the CVS's of the world or the Wegmans of the world or others who are part of this plan. And Andy Slavitt, who worked for the Obama administration, has a really good podcast on the pandemic. And he, about a month ago, interviewed the CEO of CVS, and who said, we've already been told that we're going to be part of this, that a lot of people will end up getting vaccinated not at a hospital or a doctor's office, but at a pharmacy, which naturally led us to wonder, does that mean Wegmans will be part of that as well? Does that mean others, you know, the Walgreens of the world? And the answer is maybe, and we will find out, I assume, very soon from the state. It could be very soon. That's what we're hearing privately, but no confirmation publicly. So whether the governor will talk about that or other issues today, we'll have it for you whenever that happens. Also want to let you know that we have an interview scheduled with the superintendent of the Rochester City School District. That's Dr. Leslie Meyer-Small. And because of the potential news from New York State today, and because of some other conversations we've had, we've moved that interview to next week. So that will happen, and we will have a chance not only to talk to her, but have you ask questions or offer your perspective as well for the superintendent of the Rochester City School District. She will be talking about reopening plans. She'll be talking about her evaluation so far of a school year in which the Rochester City School District is the only district in Monroe County to go full remote for an extended amount of time. And we'll see if she feels at this point that was the right call and if there will be changes in the works. And she'll talk all about the process and how they've evaluated it, how they've tried to keep people safe, and what comes next for students and learning. So that'll be next week, and that we will certainly have that interview for you. After our only break of the hour, we're talking to someone who has been vaccinated. We're going to talk about vaccine schedules. And we're also going to talk about how we evaluate what's fair for what is open, what is not open. You know, we're going to see 6,700 fans at the Buffalo Bills game tomorrow in Buffalo, but we still don't see a green light for outdoor arts and festivals. So there's a lot of talk about that and more coming up after this break. Coming up in our second hour, emergency department doctors, local health care providers, reached out to us this week and asked if they could join us on Connections to talk to the community. What they are seeing in emergency departments with COVID is frankly horrifying. They are seeing it up close. A lot of us are not. And they want us to understand just how serious the pandemic has become. We'll talk about it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Talking about vaccinations, I want to bring in a guest who was part of a vaccine trial this past summer. And if you're part of a vaccine trial, you don't know if you got the vaccine or the placebo, but they've been sending that information out. Erica Fee is with us. She's also the producer of the Rochester Fringe Festival. What's the official name of the Fringe Festival so I make sure that everyone gets credit?
It's the KeyBank Rochester Fringe Festival. KeyBank's our title sponsor, but we are a nonprofit organization.
Okay.
So our technical name is Rochester Fringe Festival. We could talk about corporate law and how that's set up for 15 minutes if you want.
No, you know,
the listeners don't want to hear that.
Probably not. No, I actually want to get back to festivals and what we can expect this year in outdoor arts in a moment. But you received your shots, I should say, what, back
yes.
in July?
June was my first shot, and July was my second shot. Yes.
When did you get notification of whether it was vaccine or placebo?
This Monday morning. I went in, and I was unblinded, and I did think that I had had the vaccine, so it wasn't a surprise, but yeah, that's when I found out.
So it was the vaccine. Why did you think it was the vaccine? Side effects?
The talk of side effects, I think, has been greatly exaggerated. Apparently, only 10% of people have any sort of side effects. Yes, I did have an increase of 1 degree temperature on a hot July day after the booster shot, but I was also taking my temperature all the time because I was in the vaccine trial and I had to. Otherwise, I never would have noticed that my temperature was up 1 degree. It was just a feeling that I had that I had had the vaccine.
When you say the side effects have been greatly exaggerated, let me just say that medical researchers have told us that there are plenty of people who have very little side effects at all, especially with the first shot, but sometimes with the second
right.
as well.
Yeah.
And so, again, how would you contrast shot one and shot two?
Oh, I mean, look, this is no different from receiving a flu shot or literally any other sort of vaccine, except in my experience. I do realize some people have had allergic reactions. There are people that have allergic reactions to other approved vaccines as well. First shot, you know, it's just your arm hurts. That's how it feels after you get a shot. And the second shot, I had, like I said, an increased temperature. My normal temperature is, I'm almost at dead levels. You know, I think my normal temperature is like 96. So maybe I was up to 97.
Okay.
And that's it.
96?
It was a little scary having taken my temperature every day this summer. I did notice I was hovering around 95 as well, but they assured me that was okay, that I was still with us.
I think that you have an entirely other condition that needs diagnosing. You're cold-blooded.
Apparently I don't. It's actually quite typical now. They don't know why a lot of people are no longer the traditional 98.6.
Dr. Erica Fee joining us.
That's right. Thank you. PMD over here.
But do you genuinely have a fear that there's too much hype about side effects and that people are going to be too scared of them?
I think that is a fear that a lot of people have, but I don't know how many. I think a lot of that is, you know, amplified on social media. And I do think that, you know, once the vaccine, from what I've heard, at least, is offered to more members of the general public, that people will absolutely, you know, be doing anything they can to get it.
Okay. So when it comes now to sort of this rollout, you have sort of the advantage that a lot of people wish they were in, Erica, of of having already been vaccinated, as opposed to wondering when their turn will be. And that's just the reality for most of us. But do you find yourself, you know, sort of evaluating this process does it look like it's going smoothly to you?
Well, as someone who works in logistics with major events, I also have that perspective. And, you know, it's incredibly frustrating because, of course, you know, the doctors are doing nothing wrong. You know, we should not blame the doctors. Of course, they're going through all the protocols that need to occur. But right now they're having, you know, single patient transactions. I was hearing from a doctor in New York, a medical expert, who said that he had his vaccine this week and he had to go through 4 stages before it actually got into his arm. And that's too many stages. So while a traditional vaccine, maybe your flu shot or if you were going in for a tetanus shot or whatever, that might be conducted in one way. You know, there are entire organizations that deal with vaccinating mass amounts of people that often work in developing nations. But this knowledge base exists. And it seems like we are kind of reinventing the wheel here in the United States. At the same time, we have all of these major organizations who are used to dealing with masses of people, festivals, stadiums, arts organizations, theaters, who we're not earning any income right now, and we're kind of twiddling our thumbs. So we have all these logistics experts who, if we were creative and we could kind of think of some sort of COVID New Deal where we could partner some of these organizations with some medical providers, I think that that could be a huge game changer. But we're not doing that, apparently.
Well, to be clear on what is being done, I think there's plenty that seems to be. I want to be careful because I actually want to break a little news here, but I want to be careful.
Right.
As a journalist, I've been having conversations with people, a lot of different sort of organizations and levels, and it is clear that we are not far away as a state from announcing a much wider distribution network for vaccines for COVID. And we're talking pharmacies, you know, we're talking the CVSs and maybe even the Wegmanses of the world, the Walgreens of the world. And when that network is rolled out, then we'll have a much clearer picture of where people like me will go to get vaccinated, which is probably not a doctor's office. Well, I just received a photo from a UPS driver named Mike. And I know Mike. Mike's a local driver, good guy, very vocal. And he posted this publicly. He posted 2 boxes that he just delivered in his UPS truck to Walgreens. And Mike says these are Moderna vaccines. He says they are among the most highly monitored by live GPS tracking technology. So as long as Mike's account of this is accurate, and I have no reason to think it's not, I mean, he is a credible local worker in the distribution network there. He's a UPS driver. It looks like Moderna vaccines are already arriving at Walgreens, which would make you assume they're going to be arriving any second now at CVS, maybe at Wegmans. Depends on what the state has set up. Yeah.
Now that kind of creative thinking is what we're going to need to achieve the kind of level of vaccination that we need to get back to, you know, these events and gatherings and life that we have previously enjoyed.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for that picture and thanks for the work you do. I'm not sure UPS drivers have slept since maybe Thanksgiving. And so now they're done with the Christmas rush and they're dealing with the vaccine distribution rush. But that's a good piece of news for us. And we'll see just how much supply there is, because then the next question becomes is how much supply is there in the network. So, Erica, one thing that we do know is happening this weekend is there's a Buffalo Bills game. Are you a big Buffalo Bills fan?
I don't know. I mean, I think that anyone who has grown up in this area should, you know, I don't know. I mean, there are plenty of Miami fans in this area, too, which is kind of inexplicable. Yes, of course, I cheer for the Bills, but I wouldn't. I don't know. I'm not at like a Chiesi sister level of Bills Mafia.
I just kind of thought maybe your allegiance would shift because, you know, there hasn't been an allowance for fans in even in outdoor stadiums in New York State. That changes tomorrow with 6,700 Bills fans who will be there at New Era Field. And meanwhile, outdoor festivals have been shuttered. We are not seeing a thumbs up for outdoor arts performances. And
right.
So when you see 6,700 fans at an outdoor sporting event, how do you square that with being the producer of the Fringe Festival?
Well, of course, you know, we always want it to be some sort of arts event. But look, the state has to start somewhere. And the good news is that the state is trying some sort of creative thinking. And they're following standard practices that have occurred in other countries and other states in terms of testing to try to get some of these special events back up and running. Now, you know, I wish them the best of luck. I think that there are some serious questions in terms of transmission, especially in the public restrooms, in the areas, the concession areas, that sort of thing. But, you know, look, it's the good thing about the stadium is that it doesn't have a roof. So in this sort of instance, that is great for air circulation and it will be much more protective for the fans than a stadium with a roof.
But does it feel, how inconsistent does the state decision making feel? Or maybe do you feel it's fair?
It was very frustrating this summer, I can say, and this fall, because, you know, we knew that outdoor socially distanced events, like if you could have 200 people, let's say at Highland Bowl, 300 people, when we did have a low infection rate with everyone wearing masks and everybody distanced, that would be considered by pretty much all experts a safe event, and that was not allowed to occur. What I'd love to see from the state is that if this Bills game goes well, that they start rolling out some sort of plan so that festivals and special events and theaters, et cetera, can start to get back on their feet for 2021, because, of course, these events are not planned overnight. You know, we really need to start planning now. And when we're in this kind of nebulous area of, is 2021 a write-off or not? It's very, very difficult for organizations.
So if you're in the room with the governor now, what's that conversation sound like?
Well, I mean, look, I think that New York State has done a very good job overall. I mean, I think that my conversation with him, of course, would start with compliments, actually, with how they've handled things. But what I would say to him is that let's have some sort of high-level commission that combines both the New York State Department of Health and the New York State Council on the Arts with some event safety experts as well, and figure out a way that we can have some safe events this summer. I mean, hopefully we can start rolling out the vaccines and our natural rate of infection as a result goes down. But I would love to see some sort of guidance that starts coming out from the state really soon in regards to these performing arts, because, you know, right now, performing arts outdoors, of course, who's going to want to have a show outdoors right now? But they're not allowed unless you have under 50 people in some parts of the state. And I guess in probably in the city of Rochester, it would be what, under 25, under 10, something like that. So it's simply banned.
How serious is the plight of festivals, of arts organizations right now?
Well, it's very serious, and it can't be, you know, overstated. We have a serious problem here with total lack of funding for the arts. There is the Save Our Stages Act that was just passed. The SBA is currently looking at what are the rules for the Save Our Stages Act, because the Save Our Stages Act actually it really pertains mainly to comedy venues right now and some music clubs, that sort of thing. It doesn't really pertain to traditional theaters and festivals. So if we are going to have performing arts and these festivals that we enjoy, and it's not just about enjoyment, of course, you know, festivals such as the Fringe are real community builders. We have a very divided nation right now. We need some good news. We need some things to actually bring us together as a community. But if we don't provide any funding for them, and we also provide absolutely no guidance as to when they can reopen, I think that no one should be surprised when some of these organizations wind up filing for bankruptcy.
Do you think state leaders, do you think local leaders are fully aware of that possibility?
I don't know that they are totally aware. There are a lot of organizations that make a lot more noise than the performing arts and the arts in general. And so the arts has not been really fantastic at advocating for itself. I will say, though, that this weekend, the Association of Performing Arts Professionals is currently having its annual conference, which is the biggest arts conference in the world. Of course, it's virtual right now. And this Saturday, tomorrow, actually, Dr. Fauci is speaking to all the performing arts professionals and presenters for the country. So I think that what he talks about in terms of vaccine rollout and what sort of timing he discusses tomorrow, that is going to immediately be a huge game changer for everyone. So I really expect that most arts organizations will be planning their seasons based on his advice.
Mm-hmm. Let me get a phone call from Bill Ferguson from Garth Fagan Dance, who's on the line with us, listening to the program. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Evan. How you doing?
Good, sir. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, considering. I'm with Erica on this. You know, if we're going to have 67,000 people going to watch a football game, why can't we have a couple hundred people outside watching a theater performance or a dance performance or a music performance? It seems, you know, it's the arts are always getting the last end of the stick, the dirty water in the bathtub, you know. So I think it's time that we make some changes here. You know, if the world is going through changes now, we need to step up and help our arts organizations remain alive. Because without arts organizations, that's where our imagination, our creativity lies, for not just for the adults, not just for a place for them to find restorative, recharging energy, but a place for our children to find out what no limits means and how to find their place in a world of no limits.
Bill, what would you at Garth Fagan do if some of these restrictions were lifted? What's your vision for what might change?
I see a series of performances happening in all the parks in Rochester and the outlying counties. You know, if the governor could provide the support to pay for the stages out there, I'm sure a lot of organizations will tone down their performances to be able to perform and have an opportunity to try and find a way to make some sort of revenue. You know, I think that we're losing out on opportunities to make some sort of revenue with all the restrictions. I'm not mad at the governor. I just think that there should be some equity across the board for businesses and for arts organizations.
Hang there for 1 second, Bill. What do you think, Eric Fee?
Oh, of course. Well, hey, anything Bill Ferguson says, I immediately agree with in general. But, no, he's absolutely right. And the other thing is, where else are we going to have these community conversations that need to occur right now on so many important topics than these stages? You know, this isn't, I would argue that the arts are really for the cohesiveness of our society, really not a want right now. They are a need. And we absolutely need the arts in order to bring us together.
Bill, do you get the sense that state leaders are fully aware of just how dire the situation could be for arts organizations?
I think they're aware of how difficult things are for arts organizations. I just think they don't have their priorities set for arts organizations as they do for businesses. We're all important.
Absolutely right.
You know, we have to find a place in there for the arts. Everything has its place. Every time we do something that costs money here, we look at the businesses first, and then we start going down the line. You know, this is not the arts aren't part of a trickle-down effect. The arts are above businesses in terms of how we move creativity in this country and the world.
Well, and Bill, I'll ask you one more, and I'll let you go, and I'll ask both you and Erica to weigh in on this. Our colleagues at City News just had a cover story on the idea that, you know, if we want to call ourselves an arts community, why do we not fund the arts? And they took a look at historical funding, what does get funded, what doesn't, what the county allocates, what it doesn't. The county didn't really respond to City News, and the county's been busy fighting this pandemic. I understand that. Mayor Warren had some things to say this week about the city's role in supporting the arts. But on that broader question, Bill, if we are an arts community, why aren't we funding the arts? Is that for the framing of that question fair? And do you think it says something about the community?
When you go to school, no question is a stupid question or an unfair question. Because there are people who make their living in the arts, and because arts affects our economy in billions of dollars, not just hundreds of thousands of dollars, I think it's a fair question, and it needs to be answered. We need to have some answers. Hmm.
Bill, as always, good to hear from you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for making the opportunity for the arts to express ourselves here. You know, we will always express ourselves. It's just you don't hear our words too often, you know. So let's see. I hope this can move our government to support the arts in a much more aggressive and with priority.
Yeah, I
with
hear that.
With priority, I would say.
I hear that. Bill Ferguson from Garth Fagan joining us. Thank you, Bill. Always good to hear you. Erica Fee, are we an arts community? Do we fund the arts?
Well, we don't fund the arts the way that other communities do, and I'll leave it at that. But there are also other creative ways in which we can support the arts during this pandemic, and it's very difficult to ask any sort of government institution right now for more money, especially in the state of New York. But if we are able to somehow advocate for the arts a little bit more, we could be talking about waiving perhaps rental fees for parks locations, waiving the rental fees for stages. Maybe there is a way that the city or the county or the state could come in on paying for policing charges. You know, there are some ways that we can help the arts organizations get back on their feet in ways that are not necessarily cash related.
Okay. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about what Bill Ferguson was describing, outdoor arts events, outdoor events in parks and whatnot. I mean, it was this past September when, you know, caseloads throughout the summer of the pandemic were very low compared to where they are now. There is certainly a seasonality of this disease. We know that, just like the flu. And yet we still didn't see, you know, sort of an abbreviated outdoor Rochester Fringe Festival.
Right.
I assume right now, Erica, that by September, most of our population will be vaccinated. I'm still very optimistic of that, and that we're going to see, I assume we're going to see a somewhat normal festival season, even if there's more masking or a little bit more distancing. But I think we're going to see festivals. Do you?
Well, I don't know. To be quite honest, I know that Dr. Fauci has recently stated that arts organizations and theaters really need to be thinking about quarter three and quarter four. And that was before the slow vaccine rollout. He was talking about quarter three, quarter four. And so we'll see what his advice is tomorrow. But I am not as hopeful as I had been maybe a month ago.
But you're quarter three.
We are quarter three, but we're not quarter four. So, you know, this is the thing. You kind of, when you plan these events, you need to be assured of the fact that they can actually happen. You know, right now we are cautiously planning, I should say, for September. But, you know, the Fringe involves also many venues, and we involve the venues actually selecting the show. So we have some headline events that we curate. Typically, those have been at Parcel 5 or at our Spiegel tent that we rent But we also have venues like Jiva Theater, Blackfriars Theater, School of the Arts, and many others. And if those organizations are unsure as to how they're functioning, then that does have a knock-on effect for the fringe, of course.
Whew. I guess I'm a little surprised to hear you backing off some of the optimism, but I think it sounds like you're trying to be realistic.
Well, I think that, you know, if this were a festival where we were to, let's say, start planning in late August, and it only took 3 weeks to plan, then we'd be fine. But, you know, it takes many, many months, so any sort of delay can have a knock-on effect. I think just a lot of arts organizations really don't know. You know, what I'm hearing from elsewhere in the country, particularly Vegas, is everybody's planning for November. November, December is when we will be reopening fully. But again, a lot of that chatter happened before the vaccines rollout started slowing. Now, can we catch up? You know, do I hope to God we can catch up? Yes, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to stress as well that in my conversations privately with state leaders, there has been an urging this week to essentially stay patient, but also know that we will see the pace pick up, that is going to happen. The Biden administration has been very aggressive in their goals. They clearly seem to be ready to mobilize whatever they need to do. There's been no national leadership or involvement here. That's part of the problem.
Right.
And so
Absolutely.
There's a lot of people sort of wandering in the dark, and we're about to see more coordination and more emphasis. So I am optimistic that we will see the pace pick up. But let me envision a scenario, and I want you to tell me what happens in this case. So I will say I cannot imagine a scenario where come September or even come late June with the Jazz Festival that we don't at least have outdoor performance, even with some restrictions. But I have to imagine outdoor arts, especially in the warmer months, are going to be in play here. But if we see, let's say, a September Fringe Festival in which only outdoor performances are doable, we don't have indoor venues, we don't have shows in cars and in creative spaces, we don't have theater shows. What is the damage to the Fringe Festival, considering you've already lost, you had to go all virtual in 2020? What's the damage? What's the damage to your viability if you cannot do a full Fringe Festival this year?
Well, look, we are going to persevere, and we're going to have a festival one way or the other. I mean, this year we had over 400 online performances. You know, we're going to get it done. However, you know, the economic damage to all of these festivals, you know, is huge. We don't have the concession sales. We don't have the ticket sales. We don't have the same sponsorships, of course, as we would for an outdoor and in-person festival. I think the thing is that these festivals and events and performances, they require rehearsals in advance. It's not as if these shows are launched right before the opening of the festival or the show reopening. And oftentimes those sorts of rehearsals are indoors, you know, and not for nothing, but it's extremely expensive to move indoor equipment outdoors. You need to have 24-hour security. You need to have special lights. You need to hire rigging. You need to hire stages. It's not cheap. So you've already got these arts organizations on their knees, and now you're basically asking them to build a whole new outdoor stage and staff it with 24-hour security. I'm not sure of the viability of that.
Yeah. Well, I think what I am certainly learning in the last few weeks, Erica, is what seems certain, we should always leave space for uncertainty during a pandemic and during these political times. And I just saw a headline flash from the Washington Post. So people seem certain that these vaccines will roll out and we'll have this or that, that we'll have school back in the fall, that we'll have $2,000 stimulus checks if both Democrats win Georgia. Well, Joe Manchin, senator from West Virginia, just told the Washington Post, absolutely not will he vote for $2,000 stimulus checks. So he's a Democrat, but you've already got one Democrat who says, I will vote with the Republicans to reject that. So right now, it looks like that is not a certain. There's a lot of uncertainty this year is what I'm saying. And I take that point, but I will remain on the side of the arts and on the side of public health. I will remain an optimist that we're going to see something close to a full Fringe Festival by September. But I understand why you're reticent.
I'm not being a pessimist. I'm just being a realist here, I think. And, I think that everything is on the table during situations like these. Even, changing festival dates, that's a conversation that's on the table. We want to get it done in one way or the other, but we want to make sure it works for our artists and our venues and the public. So I'm really, really hopeful that this Buffalo Bills game actually does produce some sort of guidance for the arts. Hopefully if they can do a gathering like this in January, we can have in person, even more socially distanced, if necessary, gatherings by September.
Erica Fee, the producer of the full name.
KeyBank Rochester Fringe Festival.
KeyBank Rochester Fringe Festival. And a lot of fans of the Fringe hoping to see it back, along with really all of the festivals that could possibly do it. Thanks for your thoughts on the vaccine. As a vaccine recipient yourself, congratulations on the good news this week, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thanks for being with us.
Thanks. Thanks again.
And our thanks to Dr. Robert Birnbaum, the Chief Medical Officer of Trillium Health, who joined us earlier this hour as well. And speaking of the medical community, you will hear from emergency doctors, ER doctors who wanted to make a point to the community about the severity of this pandemic, and they want you to hear the message. It's coming up next hour.